Welcome back. We're now going to start this next module, which is going to focus on, again, what's new in Windows 8.1 from a developer's perspective using JavaScript. And we're going to be looking into the topic of storage, networking, and security. So probably not the most thrilling or exciting topic sometimes, but I've already noticed even some who were engaged with the chat that said they were looking forward to a few of the things. So hopefully you'll get something out of here that you're really going to enjoy. And remember, this is about not everything that there is. It's just about the deltas or what's new or what's been changed. Some of the changes that we'll look into actually have nothing that you need to do programming-wise. It's like what you get out of the box for free now just by merit of there being an upgrade. So we even highlight things like that too.
I can't imagine a topic that is dry enough that Michael Palermo couldn't spruce it up.
Well, let's see what I can do here because, you know, some of this stuff is, again, a little, you know, intense or it may not, it's kind of like that dry read material, but we'll see. I think I selected the demos just to make sure that the demos would be a little bit more engaging. And that also highlights something, too. Not everything is going to get demoed. Not everything's going to be covered to a degree. It's not going to be this long, elaborate how-to session. A lot of it's just to say, hey, you know what? You want to be aware as we're getting into 8.1, can you intelligently, as a developer, architect that next iteration of the app and say, I'm aware that this feature exists. Sometimes that's all, you know, that's required at a certain moment because, you know, you can always get the how-to stuff later. So we want to equip you and make sure that you're aware of what you can do. So let's go ahead and take a look at our agenda here. We already did controls. We're now into this portion of it, and we're going to get right into the first topic in the module agenda, and that is dealing with files. So with regard to files, there's three major categories. I mean, there's lots of independent things that are separate, but three major categories that I saw that you could look at as deltas in 8.1. The first would be you get to pick a file regardless of your app layout. And if you don't know what that means, it means that when you were actually in Windows 8 and the file picker was used, you had to be full screen. It went full screen. And what if your app, though, was in a snap view? Well, then that was problematic. So again, just out of the box, if you're now using the file picker control and you're using that and you're in a snap view, it will actually accommodate to the view that you're in. And the thing that you want to keep in mind about that, which is kind of nice now, too, is that in a full screen, you might choose to do a layout of your files, maybe as big tiles, but you can programmatically change it that if you're in a snap view, well, maybe what you'll do there is you'll show a smaller thumbnail or something like that. So it gives you a little bit more control based on the layout and the positioning of the app. So again, that wasn't available in 8. It is now in 8.1. You don't even have to do anything different in your code. It's just there. So that's a nice feature. The other thing that you have here also is this new folder and file navigation support. And so I'll give you some examples. The ability for you to be at a certain file location and request the parent folder. That's something that we didn't have before. There's the ability to also snoop around and see what other files exist within the same folder that we're in. And there's new folder types, the known folders property. If you've been dealing with files at all, there's a couple new ones. I believe a camera roll and I think playlist. And we'll see these also when I do my first demo. And then there's just easier management and control. That was a really easy way for me to describe some of the new features because some of it just means we've simplified the API or we've made it possible for you not to worry so much about error management. In the example of requesting a file, let's say, there's a way now that we could do so. And instead of worrying about the exception management piece, all we have to do is just check to see if the file's null or not. And if it was null, that means it wasn't successful. So those are some of the major areas. Now, with regard to seeing this in action, let's go ahead and move to a demo. And I don't know, Jeremy, was there a lot of, I think there was a few examples of files and stuff in Kocho, was there not?
Yeah, there are some that already exist in there, yep.
Yeah, and so I think the file picker, so if you have Windows 8 installed and you wanted to put Kocho into Snap View, and try that. You know, the Windows 8 version, of not the newest one. Of course,
you would try the storage demo in the existing code show.
Yeah,
for Windows 8.
Yeah, the storage demo, and I think you had one called File Picker as well, where you can go in there and you could put it in Snap, and you'll see that it's going to have that conflict.
That's right. In the storage demo, we show the save picker, and then there's a separate file picker demo.
Cool. So let's go ahead and take a look at my screen now. You should be seeing Visual Studio, and I have a file access. So this is not Code Show, and in fact, a lot of the things that I'll be showing today are not in Code Show at this time. There's a few things that I'm waiting to do my synchronizations on. After seeing Jeremy have to do a couple live debug sessions, I think I got a little scared. So I'm going to show you a couple of the things that are part of some of the samples that you can get. And in fact, even before I demonstrate this, I want you to see how simple it is for you to install your own sample without even having to go search around for it on the internet. So I'm going to go to File, New, Project. So notice it was File, New, Project. Control-Shift-N is the keyboard shortcut there in Visual Studio. And when I do that, you'll notice that there is this online feature right over here. So if I zoom in on that, you'll see that in the online, under samples, you're going to want to go click on the JavaScript portion. And I'm going to do that right now. And under the Windows Store apps, all of these, you might see a view that looks like this. You could just toggle your views however you want. But all the different types of things, in fact, many of the things that we're talking about today are sourced from here. So you can peruse what's available in here, and then just by selecting it, you've downloaded that sample locally to your area. So I just want you to know that's what I did. The file access sample is the one that I'm demonstrating right now. So, but I modified it a little bit, and I'll show you what I mean. First, I'll run it, and then we'll look at some of the code. So, local machine. And here it is. So first of all, I'm going to create a file. I'm going to create a file called sample.dat. So it's been created. And it says it's going to be created in the pictures library. So the demo told us where it's going to go. Now I'm going to go to the next demo, which is getting a file's parent folder. So if I say get parent, then you could see down here that when I zoom in, it says, okay, the parent was the pictures folder. So it gave us two things. It gave us the name of the folder, and then you'll also notice in parentheses the path to that folder. So you get both of those. And going back here, I'm also going to demonstrate how you can compare to see if two files, to see if they're the same file. So two files to see if they're the same. I'll compare. Now, I'm going to go over to, you'll see I have this pictures folder, and I want to find that, what was the name of that thing called? Dat? What was that? Sample, I forgot the name of the, sample dat, there it is, right there. So what it did is it's loaded the file already in memory, and now it's saying, go select some other file and see if they're equal. So this is the file it created. I'm going to go ahead and select it. I'm going to say open. And then you're going to see over here that it says the files are equal. They are. Now I'm going to compare the files again. This time I'm going to go to this folder called Other. It's one that I created. And inside I have a sample.dat file. It's the same exact thing as the other one. I'm going to select it. I'm going to click open. And before I do, make a guess. What do you think? Will it be the same? Let's find out. They are not equal. So file equality, when you see this in code, you now have seen for yourself. It means, is it that file? That's what it really means. Is what you have right now in memory, in storage, is it actually that file? Is it a reference to that file? That's another way that you can think about it. It is not doing some kind of a look to see if it's the same duplicate of a file. So that's not what equality means. So you've seen it for yourself. Now you know. Now you've seen it here first, actually, on this MVA Jumpstart. All right, deleting a file is pretty simple. I can go ahead and delete it. And that's great. That's nothing new in Windows 8.1. You could have deleted that before. But what you can do now is say, let me go ahead and retrieve that which I just deleted, and it's not going to cause an error. Watch. Get file. Null. And you might say, I don't believe you. Maybe that was just a button that just prints the word null. So let's go find out. I'm going to go take a look at the code. I will stop the debugging process. And let's go ahead and take a look at all those scenarios that we just looked at. So first of all, with regard to getting the parents folder, right here is what you're going to want to look at. This get parent async is how it's done. Now you'll notice, if I full screen this out, that when you call get parent async, that the function that you provide here in this promise is a function that takes in a parameter, and we've named it parent folder. And from there, I can get the name, and I can also get the path. So that's what that is right there, the name and the path. And you see this also down here as well. The other scenario that we looked at was equality. That is done with this, is equal. Once again, when you do this comparison of is equal, then you're checking to see if it's actually a reference to the exact same file. And so a scenario, by the way, that you might have for that is if you currently have something that the user's been working on, and now you're going to want to go ahead and check to see, maybe they're wanting to save it, you want to check to see, are they overwriting the same thing, or are they putting this into something else? That would be a reason why you would use this particular is equal. And now let's go ahead and check out the other scenario. And this is done this way. When you try to get an item async, and I try to get the sample.dat from the known folders pictures library, and note that I did put on the screen what those two new properties are that you can start to use from known folders, and that's camera roll and playlists. When you call this item here, the function returns a file. Now, the reason why we're checking on this line 26, if file is not equal to null, is because if it isn't, that means it worked. But if it is null, that means something was wrong. So instead of throwing an error, we just simply get something null back. So for a lot of you who are doing, let's say, a lot of file I/O, this might be very nice for you so that you don't have to worry about a whole bunch of issues. All right, so I'm going to return now to my presentation. And I want to start to tackle what the next topic is going to be, which is networking. So with regard to networking, I thought some of the major highlights there, of course, that aka.ms/what's new 8.1 link will show you a few more items that I didn't feel were necessary to cover in detail here. But the one that I'd like to get into now, which I thought was very cool, was this new HTTP client API. And in fact, I wanted to have the code on the screen so I can talk through it. And of course, a shameless plug for my website. So the first thing, and this isn't new, is that you can create a URI. So I explicitly put no shortcuts in here in terms of aliases. I wanted to have the fully qualified names to all of those objects here. So new windowsfoundation.uri, and there's the palermo4.com. The next line is interesting. I'm creating a filter. So it's windows.web.http.filters.http-base-protocol-filter. Now that's a lot to say. In this particular sample that I have on the screen right now, it was not necessary for me to create, if I were going to do exactly what was on the screen, it wouldn't be necessary for me to have done just this. But I'm doing this so I can talk about it. And that is, I created what would be the base behavior or base filter behavior when I start to use my HTTP client. You'll notice that that word filter becomes part of the next line when I create an instance here of the HTTP client, which also is in windows.web.http. Filter is now in the constructor, quote unquote, of that particular object. And that means use this filter. So why do we have this new HTTP client and this filter option? This is another example of, this is a suggested way for you to start doing your HTTP calls from your app. It's a simplified API in terms of the actual HTTP client. You'll see in that next method just below, when you create the HTTP client, that you're immediately calling the getStringAsync, placing in that URI, and then that function just takes the response, and you can use the response how you wish. And then, of course, if some error happens, then you can request the message property. So that's a pretty simple implementation. The thing that makes it really nice, though, is the filter gives you the ability to take things to the next level. If you were doing one-offs, let's say that you just had a one-off where you needed to do a custom HTTP header in your request, and you needed to do that just on a one-off, you probably wouldn't use a filter. But what if your application is going to make use of that quite a bit? Instead of redoing that code over and over again, what you could do is you can formally create a new HTTP filter type that contains the business logic that will help in those scenarios. And then what's even more is, through the power of promises and chaining, we can represent multiple filters to our HTTP client so that we can impose or implement business rules for all of our HTTP requests. So that's a pretty cool new feature that's available. And right now, what I think would be a great thing to do is just to see a brief demo of this in action. So I'm going to go ahead and get Visual Studio open to the appropriate project. I'm going to close what I had here before and open up my HTTP one, which I'll have to actually go open right here. And again, this is another one of those demos that were available on the site. In fact, I think it's right there by the HTTP client at that one link that I provided. And let's go ahead and run this first so that you can see what it does. I really enjoyed this first one, and I think this is the one that I want to highlight the most, although I'll scroll down and show you some of the other things that you could do or see in this demo, but the get text with cache control. So check this out. And this is done, by the way, through a filter. And I'll show this in code in a second, through a property on the filter, actually, the base one. So if we're going to go to a site, let's just say it was palermo4.com. What a great demo site. So I'm going to say,
shameless plug.
So I'll put that there. If I hit start right now, it's going to go to the site. It's going to say, hey, Mike, remember you put a breakpoint there? I did that intentionally because I wanted to be able to talk about what the response body as text looks like. But I'll go ahead and hit continue. And you could see that the complete and the response, and it says it came from the network. That was your first call, dude. Okay. However, if I were to click on the start again, with the options that we have selected, it says if it's already in the cache, which it gets put in the cache on this call because I said default, it's cacheable, then when I hit start again, go ahead and hit continue, you'll see that this came from the cache. So this gives you some control over how you would like to go ahead and make these calls, because as you can see here, if you look at some of the options, default is there, but we can also choose most recent or only from the cache. It actually never hits the network. And this is something you can alter programmatically. So that's pretty cool. I like that feature. And I want to show you now in code where you would see that. So I'll stop the debugging. And expanding this screen, I wanted to highlight the very first thing that is important is where filter gets created. There we go. So filter, this word right here, is a base protocol filter. If we were to create an HTTP client and not provided a filter, guess what? It would actually use one of those underneath the hood anyway. The advantage, however, of extracting that base filter first and then passing it into the constructor of your client is that you can then later on modify that filter with what properties are available. And it just happens to be that some of those properties would be cache control. I want to control the cache behavior for read and write behavior. So that's what these are right here. And so just by these simple one-liners through this filter, we can control behind the scenes how all that stuff is going to get managed. I think that's a very cool thing, and that was done specifically with these with this filter option that was passed in. We didn't have to change any other code as how we accessed it. We just had to toggle a switch, so to speak, on this filter. Another thing I'll show you real quick in code is this retry filter. And the retry filter, when I pop it in here, you'll see it points to this HTTP filters HTTP retry filter. Well, wait a minute. What's this all about? What's this HTTP filters? Well, in this project right here, if I zoom in, you'll see that this is a C++ project that is part of the solution, and it has created a custom HTTP filter to be used within this project type. So let me go ahead and possibly preemptively strike at a question you might have on that, and that is, can you create a custom JavaScript filter without having to do anything with like C# or C++? And the answer is not at this time. No, you will need to have a project like C# or C++ that creates this, you'll reference it, and then you'll bring it in. Otherwise, anything else that you're going to do is just going to be extending or manipulating the properties on that base filter type. So that's why I had that page open, is just to show you that that was a separate project that created a custom HTTP filter. Now I'm going to go back to running this again. I'm going to remove my breakpoint because it's not necessary, wherever it was. Well, when it comes up, I'll just ignore it. Because it won't come up, because I just wanted you to see all the different things that you could do here. Post stream with progress. The ability for you to get or set cookies from within your app. A metered connection filter. So these are some of the different options that you have available. And I'll go ahead and close that out. And get on to our next exciting topic. Whoops, did it start me over? I think it must have.
That HTTP client is pretty exciting. I've been in the habit of using the WinJS XHR, and you still can use WinJS XHR, but you've got some serious benefits to learning how to use the HTTP client, the header control and the caching, and I think you've got a little bit of cross-control across different requests. Mm-hmm. So there are a number of things that you get right out of the box. And then it's nice, too, we had some questions in the chat room about it. What's the equivalent in C#? And what we're actually using behind the scenes is a WinRT component. So JavaScript and C#, they work exactly the same thing because they're both calling the same exact WinRT component. So that's pretty neat.
That's very cool. Okay, I think I fixed my slide. So if we can go back to that screen. We're looking at now another feature here called background transfer updates. So background transfer existed in 8.0, but what is now new or different in this is that we have a background transfer group which allows for uploads and downloads that can be done either parallel serial, or you can now control or base the priority. Think of it this way. What you can do is you can batch, let's say, a series of downloads, but allow the user to specify which one of those is more important to them right now. So that's a new feature. The other thing that you could do through this background transfer is there's a nice formal way to update your live tile or toast notifications. So that makes sense that we would have that, and so it's there. And this is another one of those features that this bottom one, or the last one, this automatic switch of download. So likely your download is going to take longer than 2 minutes. Without you having to do any work, there's an automatic switch to preferred network if one becomes available, and it'll just do that nice and automatically for you. That's one of those, like I said, you don't have to change anything. You just get the benefit of having that as part of that new environment for 8.1. So with that said, I will now go ahead and do the next demonstration, which is going to be looking at the background transfer. And I'll switch over to Visual Studio and get that project on the screen. So, background transfer. This is yet again another one that you can download, and it's available through that new project in the online template. And I'll run this to start. So I would like to start a file download, and I'll do that right here. And I'm waiting. So it finally gave me a completed. Now, I'll let you know right off the bat, for those of you who are watching, or maybe you were savvy enough to go and download this and you're trying this yourself and you're like, hey, that didn't work for me. If that's the case, it's because I had a web server up and running right now, locally on my machine. And there's instructions in the description of this particular demo that shows you how you can run a PowerShell script in order to get that all set up for yourself as well. So you'll need to do that step if you want to have all the grooviness that I'm about to do. All right, so going back over here, I want to show, let me show an example. I think this is the one that I thought was the wow factor, was completion notifications. Now, just before I do anything here, I'm going to go over to my start screen. And you'll notice that on my start screen, I have under this demo section over here, it just says Windows SDK background transfer, you know, JS. So right now it's static. There's nothing exciting going on. All right, go back over to the app. Start three downloads and update the tile on completion. All right, tick-tock. I'll go over back to the start screen. Oh, it's not done yet. I'm so impatient. Let's see. There we go. You see where it says all three downloads completed successfully. So we just updated our live tile just based on that, and I'll show you how that looks in code in a second. We could also do the same. This one's easier. I can sit back and kind of put my hands behind my back and just enjoy the show here. Start three downloads and show toast on completion. So I'll just do that. Put my hands behind my back, just letting everything happen. And you know, apparently at some point when this is all done, we will see a toast notification appear on the screen. And this is, again, all part of this background transfer API stuff. Oh. What to do? All right, let's go back to the screen, see if it's going to pop up here anytime soon. Come on, you can do it. Show us toast notification. You know what? It is possible that I turned them off in presentation mode. It's possible.
You know, that's a good thought. We turned our computers into presentation mode.
I think I turned them off. Because of what you did in another jumpstart we did, you started tweeting and I had the Twitter notification pop right on the screen. So I got nervous today. So I think I actually just destroyed that demo by turning filters off.
You
want
to go turn it right back on?
Well, no, but what I'll do is
I'll
show you.
And then I'll tweet you?
No. What I will do, however, is I'll just show everyone what the code actually looks like so you can see how much work you're going to have to do in order to make all this possible. So we'll open this up. And right about, let's see. Yeah, the notifications group is pointing to the group that was created up here. And we are saying there's a transfer behavior that it'll be in parallel. And then down below, this is where we start to see it is right. Pardon pardon, just so it's just right here in this code. In fact, this is showing the actual creation of the toast that will be used. And then the same thing also applies for the tile notification as well. And so go ahead and create. This is for those of you who've done tile, live tile stuff, you can see that this looks pretty familiar. You're just updating the tile with what's necessary. And of course, to support the different tile sizes, we have those here as well. So that's what you have to do in order to get those things to work. Let me switch back over and I'll hit this. I won't start the whole thing all over again, hopefully. Okay, I think we're good to talk about the next thing that's kind of under this guideline of networking. Go ahead and take a look here at connected standby updates. So one of the features that we have is something called connected standby. Now, apps that have access to the Windows lock screen can now receive network packets. So that's important. And there's something called support for quiet hours. And when I do my next demo, I want to show you what that means. But essentially, you can configure your environment in 8.1 to have a quiet hours, which means you don't want to have notifications and stuff come in. However, you can have some behind-the-scenes stuff happen, and that's where the support for quiet hours comes into play. And because we're talking about connected standby in 8.1, again, there's nothing that you have to do here. This is just an FYI, and that is support for different network type adapters have been included. And so if you were, let's say, hardwired in or using a mobile broadband network adapter, perhaps that standby didn't happen the way you thought it should, and now it would in this next release. Next thing that we're going to talk about here is called geofence. The moment that I learned about this, I saw so many possibilities here. And especially since we like gaming and stuff, I kind of like the gaming implications here of geofence. So what is geofence? We know what geolocation is. A geofence allows your app to define a radius around some geographical point of interest. And what that means is that once your device, when your app is running and that device enters into or exits that radius, you're going to be aware of that. It's pretty cool. I mean, I think about it this way. And I've seen this implemented in other types of apps, but imagine that you are creating a to-do list system and you only want certain to-do lists to appear if you're at home. You only want certain to-do lists to appear if you're at work. Well, with your new groovy geofence feature, you can actually dynamically determine what you will display. Say, hey, you're at work. Guess what? You have this, this, this to do. You know, you're at home. You have this, this, this to do.
I've got an idea.
Okay.
I wanted geofence before it existed, and here's why. Whenever I go to a certain place, I need to remember that while I'm there, I need to stop at something. So, you know, in a town nearby, it's 20 miles away. I rarely get there. But next time I go there, I need to remember to pick up a widget. And so I'd set a geofence,
yeah,
and then the next time I drive there, bam, it pops up and says, hey, remember, while you're here,
yeah,
pick up a widget.
That is very good. So you know what? We've just given away our groovy ideas for
Dang
free.
It. Now somebody's going to make that before
you
me.
You make these apps, you own it. So be sure and think. I was even thinking for gaming possibilities. My goodness, if you have different gaming hub stations that you set up and so forth, or it puts a whole different spectrum on the things that you could possibly do with physical location where you are, and you can even control the radius pretty extensively as well.
Yeah.
So very exciting about that. Now, I did have a demo for this, but the reality is it's pretty boring. So I'm not going to do it because I can't.
You have no way of spicing that up.
Yeah. So I did have something, and I didn't think it through until I thought, well, I'm not going anywhere, and if I'm already here, I'm here. So I can show you my coordinates, but what's that going to mean?
We've got a pretty long cord on our microphone.
Yeah. However, I do want to take this opportunity, so I'll escape out of there, and I do want to show what I meant when I was talking about earlier, the quiet hours.
And before you get into that, let me just say that the simulator, the Windows 8 simulator, does allow you to pretend like you're somewhere. And so if you're working on a geofence application on an app, you can move yourself in your simulator. You can pretend like you're moving even though your computer is standing perfectly still.
Yeah, unwittingly, Jeremy Foster just called me out for not having that thought through. That was brilliant.
No, that was wittingly.
Oh man, I'm just getting trashed. Okay, but yeah, that's a great idea. In fact, I wish I would have thought of that about an hour ago. Okay, well let's go to my screen. I want to show you what this Quiet Hours feature is all about. If I were to just do a search and start to type QU. In fact, it's already popping up on the screen over here. It's like, choose which apps can show notifications on the lock screen. Choose whether to receive incoming calls during quiet hours. Well, let me just click on one of these, which actually pulls up both of them. If I scroll down to the, let me go back. It took me to the wrong area. Let me just close that and try this yet again. Maybe it was the other one. Quiet. Maybe it was this one right here. Oh, yeah, here it is. So you'll see the term quiet hours actually appears on the screen. And that is right here. And this is where I, as the consumer, can come in and say, I want my machine not to disturb me with all these notifications during this time. However, what you are allowed to do here is you can go in and specify if there were, let me go back to that, specific apps that would be allowed. So as long as they're on, and they're on the lock screen. If you turn this off, then that nullifies everything. Then it won't work. All right, let me flip back over here. And so we've talked about some of the features that we have networking, and I have one more to talk about, and that is security. Some of the security features and updates. So I'm going to go ahead and address a few of those right now. For starters, and I noticed that there was earlier someone said, oh, I'm looking forward to that fingerprint authentication. Well, you know, we'd need a reader, and I don't know how exciting it would be for you to see me do, you know, anything with it. So. I'm just letting you know, if you go to that, the aka.ms/whatsnew81, you can get some more information. And there is a demo that you can download, should you have a fingerprint reader, that you can test it with. And there are some out there. There's some other updates to the credential locker. So, for example, the credential locker allows for the persistence of credentials for a user. And sometimes they may have multiple credentials for one resource. You know, an example that I could think of right away is I know a lot of people who have multiple credentials to Twitter, you know, because they have multiple accounts there. So that's an example. Some people have multiple Microsoft accounts or whatever the case is. So when that happens, what didn't happen before is we didn't have a default of those multiple credentials, and now there is one. So that's what default is. The last accessed gives you, as the developer who is doing the app, to say, if we're going to be using a credential locker credential, can we access when they last accessed it? And that might help you to see, according to your business rules, what you want to do with that. And also, an application suite idea. This is a really nice idea. This would be in the example when you need to share credentials with multiple apps, but those multiple apps in themselves have a shared resource that would use that same credential. So it's multiple apps with one credential to an underlying resource. As long as you are using the application suite ID, then that would be possible as well. We also have the web authentication broker, and the feature that you can add there is it will automatically update and fill the existing credentials based on the user's consent and store that into the credential locker. So that's just another one of those wins. You didn't have to do anything different. It's just there for you now. The other feature that I thought was pretty cool is selective wipe. Have you heard of that before? Selective wipe?
No.
Prior to learning it, I had not heard that before.
So which is like, usually the case.
But it sounded exciting. I did like the way it sounded. Selective wipe. So it allows you to identify folders and files on a PC that can be revoked by a command from the server. And those are the two major ways that you would probably do it is through something called the File Revocation Manager. So here's the scenario. Let's talk this one through. You're creating an app. It's going to be used in an organization. And there might be some sensitive files, you know, client files, whatever the case is. And the app is in control of managing these particular files. And then the employee decides to do something that maybe is grounds for termination or something to that effect. And there is a way now that this particular app can be notified to basically say that all the data is inaccessible. Now, I can't wait to show you the demo for this. It's very cool because it can be demoed, and it's pretty neat. I like it. I don't want to demo it because I'm in that scenario. I want to demo it because I want you to see how it works technically. It's pretty cool. So I'm going to go ahead and get Visual Studio open, which is right here, and close what I had there and open up the file revocation project. This one I'm going to go ahead and run first, and then I'll show you what the secret sauce is. So run local. I have to get everything started, and just in case I didn't do this before, I'm going to clean up all the files and folders right now, which means this is kind of a reset. If you happen to download this, you might want to consider it too. Protect a file or folder with an enterprise identity. So I'll keep this enterprise ID. I'm going to say go ahead and get it set up. And it's saying, where would you like this to go? I'm going to choose the folder, this demo folder. Let me go up. This is going to be my folder, so I'll choose this folder. This is where I want things to go, and I'm going to say OK. The reason why I had that underscore underscore demo is I wanted to have a designated spot for this demo in order to show you what's going to happen here when we do our protection of the files or the folders. So I will go ahead and protect file, and I'll protect folder. So what just happened by merit of me doing that? I think a very cool thing would be to see how it actually is going to play out when I go over into my documents and into this demo folder. Can you see that we got some green going on? See, this isn't just an application controlled thing. This is taking advantage of a new feature here. My files are green in the operating system. I'm in the file viewer, I'm not in an app, because they are now designated as having this enterprise-level protection, specifically with these this Contoso ID. So that's pretty cool. Now, what does it mean? I have this file open, or I have this revoke sample TXT that's in green, which indicates to me that it is part of this protection. If I were to double-click it, I can open this right now. I can even make a change, say File, Save, and then go ahead and close it. Okay, so you could tell already just zooming in here that change that I made is reflected here, and now that there's 1 kilobyte of data in there. Great. So going back over to the app, what if I were to, let's say, and confirm the protection status of these files or folders. So let me get the status. It returns numeric values. 3 represents it's protected. 1 means it's just standard. And you will see yet another value here soon. Another value to represent doom for that particular one. That's what we're going to do. We're going to revoke. I'm going to go back to this app and revoke an enterprise identity. So using this, basically, I'm going to say, go revoke. Boom. It was revoked. It says, your files aren't protected, or the files protected are not accessible anymore. So I'm going to go back to number 3, get a status. You can see number 2 is the evil number. That's the one that's going to say it's revoked. But is it really? I mean, couldn't I just go over to the file explorer like I have here? Looks like I can still access this bad boy. Let me go ahead and just double click it. What? So this is actually a control at the file system, and literally, I have no access. The only thing that is allowed to do with that file right now is to delete it, which I will do. When I go back over here to the app right here and say clean up the files and folders, which I just did, and so everything was deleted. So that is what selective wipe is, and I just want you to see real quickly going back over to Visual Studio.
This is a massive differentiator for the Windows 8 platform. If you work at a company where you're thinking about what kind of a tablet can we bring into our industry, and in a lot of industries, there's just absolutely no choice for any other kind of tablet other than one that's running Windows 8. The Windows 8 operating system is certified to run on over 3,000 devices already. That means that when you get something innovative like a Panasonic ToughBook or something like that that's able to run Windows 8 on it, all of a sudden you have a device that's got some really strong characteristics for a certain industry. A ToughBook is something that, you know, you could use in construction equipment, you could drop it and throw it and whatever, and it's just going to be fine. There are devices that are certified to work in hospitals because they can be sterilized. And that's one of the big advantages to having a broad array of devices. And this ability to selectively wipe data from the device is another huge one. There are industries where as soon as that device leaves the proximity, the device data should be deleted. It must be deleted. And if it can't be done, then that industry, that organization is not able to move to a digital world because they can't risk that.
Yeah, it's a fantastic differentiator. I was so glad that the name of it was kind of a groovy, the selective wipe. It got me interested into the topic. The more I looked into it, I thought the same thing. This will probably be used very much, and you probably already have some ideas as to how that would be beneficial. I wanted to show you briefly on the screen that I'm taking you specifically to the revoke portion of it. In fact, if I just highlight that here with an arrow, if you wanted to see how to protect it, I would recommend you download the sample. It's not that the protection part is hard, but one of the nice features with the protection is that you can apply a lot of filters. Like you can say, I want to protect everything that's a certain type of document in a certain kind of area. So there is a benefit for you to having a lot more options in terms of when you go protect. But on the screen right now is what I think is pretty cool. And that is, once you have that enterprise ID, what you're doing is you're saying, just revoke. You're not worried about everywhere else. You don't have to go find everything. Everything that was protected is taken care of. I think that's pretty slick. I like that. So anyway, that is what selective wipe is all about, and I think that that's going to be something that's going to be used quite a bit. Okay, well, that brings us to the summary for this particular module, and basically we talked about the updates as they apply to files, simplified approach for some of those things, and a couple new properties for navigation. We had networking, and we also discovered a few things in security. There's a lot at that link that you can go discover what's new, but I'm really excited about these things, and I also enjoy the fact that most of it I don't have to do a lot of work. I can just take advantage of some of them just being implemented behind the scenes, which in this kind of a genre of topic, a lot of it would be behind the scenes. So, stay tuned.
Is it all right if we take some questions?
Let's do it.
Okay, we'll throw some at you, and I know that some of these feel like they're a little bit deep, so you may or may not know the answer to these, but will the once you've revoked some files, you showed how we programmatically can delete those files. Do you know if it's possible after revocation to delete the files in File Explorer?
If you don't mind, let's just try it.
There you go.
Let's just try it, because I'm pretty sure the answer to that is yes, but I like to prove things, so let me escape out of there.
And it was done programmatically, right? So I, as the administrator, am able to say, okay, George is being fired and is no longer trustworthy. Mm-hmm. Let's revoke the files on his machine and programmatically delete those files, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so it's not like I can only revoke them and George still has the opportunity to attempt to hack those bits. He doesn't even have the opportunity because the files have been deleted as well.
Well, the thing is that the enterprise, as far as I'm concerned, can only revoke it doesn't revoke and delete at the same time.
So when you did the delete, you clicked the button to hit the delete, and behind the scenes, was it doing that programmatically, though?
All it did is it said anything that is in revoke status gets deleted.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So if you're the developer on a device, you do still have the ability to... Well, I guess if you've got a modern app, you may not have the jurisdiction.
You won't have access to open it. The app will not have access to open it.
Okay.
It won't have access to edit it. The only permission that appears to be available, and we're going to prove this right now, is just delete.
Okay.
Which is a protection because it means you're revoked and we don't want you into it, and if it's deleted, all the better, right?
Yeah, right.
So, otherwise, it's a worthless file.
Yeah.
And it's not, you can't reverse it. So, I mean, once it's revoked, it's revoked.
Can the administrator reverse it? Can he unrevoke a file?
So, that's a great question. I don't know.
Yeah. We'd have to dig in, huh?
My guess is no. But, you know, to hold to the promise that a revoke means it's revoked. But if there is an administrative privilege that says, oops, you know, let's figure this one out, then we'd have to check into that.
I'm guessing that an administrator or the developer... With the rights would be able to unrevoke it. That's just my guess, and I wonder if anybody in the chat room wants to take that on as a challenge and go do some binging right now, and find out the answer to that and drop the answer in the chat room. That would be really helpful.
So I am going to the demo folder now. I've already done the revoking of the files, and one thing I will show you too is when you right click on the file. You'll also see that there's a remove enterprise control option. And there's, you know, there's the, so if I were to click that right now, it says, well, that might actually answer your question.
Oh, okay. So
continue
that might
if you're an admin. So that's good to know. But then if I wanted to delete this file, yeah, that was easy to do.
Okay.
Yeah, so it sounds like the admin thing might work then.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay. All right. Anything else
control.
That I can do live and...
And do you guys want to ask any other questions? Somebody said, yeah, use geo-proximity and selective wipe together. That's a great idea. As soon as this device leaves the premises, it's dead.
Woo! I like it.
The data is gone.
Yeah. That's great.
Let's see. Okay, we still have a couple minutes. You guys can drop some questions in the chat room if you want us to answer them live. I'm trying to look for existing questions that would be appropriate to answer live. There are a lot of good ideas around geo-proximity. There are lots of things that you could use that for.
While you're doing that, just if you could, remember that hashtag for Twitter, the hashtag MVA Jumpstart, and also if you could tweet myself or Mr. Jeremy, in this particular module or any of the modules that we do for the day. If there was a particular feature that you liked the most or you had some commentary on, we would like to hear about those as well. We'll be looking at those feeds.
Yeah, and somebody in the chat room is asking for your personal email address. I'm not sure if you're comfortable giving yours out. I'm comfortable giving out my email address. Although I usually give the disclaimer that you may not ever get a reply if I happen to be at a really busy time. We stay really, really, really busy. And so I'll try really hard to get back to your email. So I'm jeremy.foster@microsoft.com, and I'm glad to give that to you.
And I am going to provide mine if you want to go over to my screen.
In the chat window.
No, it's right there.
Oh, there you go. mpalermo.
mpalermo@microsoft. Oh, .com. So add the .com yourself. I forgot to add that. But go ahead and do that. And that's a scene from our gaming Jumpstart. Isn't that crazy?
It's insanity. And we're also on Twitter, palermo4 at Twitter, on Twitter, and at Code Foster on Twitter. So that's another good place to keep in touch with us. There's another question in the chat room that says, is it possible to use... XMLRPC.net and or JSON.net frameworks with Windows or Windows Phone using HTML5. In my opinion, I can't think of a single need for using JSON.net in HTML5 because when you're using HTML5, you're using JavaScript.
Yeah.
And so in JavaScript, you just do JSON.parse your JSON object and bam, you've got it. You've got your whole object right there. JSON, the format, was born out of JavaScript.
Yeah.
And is perfect for JavaScript. That's one of the reasons why I love it. You fetch a JSON object, and you just instantiate it and you've got it.
Yeah, so, yeah, maybe we don't understand the question, but, yeah, you get the full benefit of having that already there. You know, JavaScript's not a strongly typed language, so you just start accessing what you know and you're good to go.
Yeah, the big advantage to JSON.NET is the fact that you can take something that came across the wire in the form mm-hmm. of JSON, and you can get, it's pretty much dynamic, and you can hydrate an object with that using JSON.NET.
Right.
But that's just not necessary in JavaScript.
True. Anything else?
The hashtag MVA Jumpstart. Use hash MVA Jumpstart for chatting about this session today. What's the best way to develop an app that takes data from the web? I'd like to have the app be executable in Windows desktop, tablet, phone. I think the best way to do that is to start with the exact kind of apps that we're talking about today, which is a Windows 8 app using HTML and JavaScript that gets you on everything except for the phone.
Right.
And on the phone, if you need to, you can either just create a new UI using XAML and C# and use kind of your same backend. Or if you want to make a web page, you can wrap it in a web view and use a mobile view, and there's still a lot that you can do on the phone. But the nice thing about doing your project in HTML and JavaScript is that you're speaking the language of the web. So I've done a lot of projects where I run out to the web, fetch the web page, scrape it, look for some certain class tags or a div tag or something like that, and pull the data out of that web page. I'm screen scraping effectively. And it's, I'm talking the same language all the way across the stack, so it's just perfect. Talking to APIs, talking to Maps applications that are online, it's wonderful.
Cool.
That's it for questions.
That's it? Okay.
Keep asking them, and we'll be here all day. And we look forward to you joining us the next module, where we're going to be talking about the UX and UI changes in Windows 8.1,
oh,
which
yeah.
are enormous.
It's the eye candy, so stay tuned.